Like a squirrel gathering nuts for the long winter, I was recording podcasts this past December at a frenzied pace, anticipating the long haul a new album's production always brings. When it comes to writing albums, everything gets put on the back burner to tend to the home fire, and that includes this podcast. Farming rock riffage is of the utmost importance in my life. Everything takes a backseat, and all creative streams must be redirected for its good. I'm very happy to report that the songs we've got brewing are making me the most excited I've been since the time we were about to step into the studio to record Born a Lion back in 2002. Now, I know every band says shit like this, but the only rule we are adhering to for this record is it's gotta be hard. JC and I keep exchanging emails about how great this batch of tunes are, so I'm very, very excited. And it is at this point that I can and must take a step back, clear out my ears, clean the palate, if you will, and that means getting these damn podcasts uploaded and out there in the ether. When it comes to podcast guests, and because they aren't chosen by anyone else but me, I've enjoyed having each one on. Of course, there are the go-to guys, like I've mentioned before, people like Wade McNeil and Brendan Canning, who can waltz in here and throw down an entertaining episode with nothing to plug and just ramble in the most interesting way, which, when you think about it, is a skill unto itself. Someone who comes on here and can deliver three podcasts worth of talk in just one sit-down is Damian Abraham, lead singer of Fucked Up. This episode is Damian's sixth appearance, and he's probably the default co-host at this point. Of course, after Nick Flanagan. What can I say about Damian that hasn't been said on the other five episodes? Just listen to those intros. On the other hand, we are sitting on the cusp of Fucked Up's new album, Glass Boys, which gets released on June 3rd. Already the song Paper the House is up online to hear, and is pretty much the same amazing Fucked Up we've all come to love. So, I myself am looking extremely forward to this. And if Damian isn't going to plug it when he comes on here, I will. Fucked Up, in my estimation, are a national treasure, and I'm just glad they're on our side. So that's my spiel as to why there was a month lag between episode number 70 with Decisive and this episode with Damian Abraham number 71. In other news, I'm very, 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 very proud to say that this podcast has officially exceeded 250,000 downloads. 250,000 downloads. Very, very proud of that. Thank you to everyone who has taken time to listen to an episode or episodes, or you've even subscribed to this. There are no plans of stopping. Sometimes slowing down for various reasons, but never stopping. I'm always a little shocked when someone comes up to me and says that they've heard a certain episode. You see, I do this shit in my room, by myself, and it's wild when there's a real-life confirmation that it's being heard. Another huge thank you is to Blue Mic Microphones and to Skull Candy Headphones for supporting this podcast all the way through. This podcast is run and made on Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones, so it's very fitting that they be both involved as much as they are. Okay, well, Damian Abraham is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast. Here's to 250,000 downloads, and here's to the next 250,000 downloads. We are headed straight to 500,000 downloads. Thank you to everybody. Let's start the podcast now.
humans.
We're going to do an intro. There's always an intro. You don't need to worry.
I know, but I mean...
Well, hey, Damien Abraham is...
We've got... well, let's face it. Gentlemen. We've got... I mean, there might be one lady listening.
No, there's definitely... accident. On Twitter, women are into... There are women. Like, yeah. We're not... If it was the Nick Flanagan, Damien Abraham podcast, it'd be all dudes.
Yeah, it would just be Gord listening, so make sure we didn't say anything bad about him.
But we got Danko here. He's got some sex appeal, so...
Oh, well...
Jeez. Well, and I mean, like, they're also gay men, too.
You mean Stanko?
And not if you're not attracted to men, you can't listen either.
Stanko Jones, as Chaos once called.
Yes, Chaos did call me Stanko Jones.
And in case you guys are wondering, we're not talking about the ancient force Chaos.
Or the comic book carry that embodied that ancient force in Marvel Universe.
We're talking about the rapper / troubadour.
A rocker.
Troubadour. Wow.
K-OS.
Yes, he called me Stanko Jones, and then I think I told Tim Perlick, like, what? I thought he was a wordsmith. That's all he could come up with?
You know, if someone's name is just three separate letters.
And then I read his Huffington Post article.
If your name's an acronym, then although actually,
that's not an acronym though.
No,
it's Chaos.
It's just like
Kevin over something.
Oh, is it?
Okay. No, I don't know.
Society. Yeah, Kevin over society. Probably it's something like that. I mean, I think what
you
do is
this starts off with a bang. We're starting off beef again.
No, I'm not
long buried beef.
No, this is like now is if you talk about beef that's old enough, it's like fossilized dog poop that's gone white. You know when dog poop goes white,
it
loses its impact.
You can eat it.
True enough.
You can put it in a stew.
Like, we're not talking about it in the same way. Like, mind you, this is two dudes that were not involved in the beef at all being like, no, it's over. It's over.
Are you glad that we never beefed?
We never beefed, but I did get sucked into some beefs that, in my mind, because of you guys.
Was it, what, formaldehyde junkies?
No, do you guys have beef with formaldehyde junkies? No, this is before that. I'm talking when I had beef with Deadly Snakes because the Killer Elite had Deadly Snakes beef. And also Teen Cred had Deadly Snakes beef.
So you hated Deadly Snakes. You were on our side?
I was definitely on your side.
I can't believe we had fights.
And wow, I love the Deadly Snakes. I don't want to tell them.
Killer Elite had beef with the Deadly Snakes.
Killer Elite?
That's interesting because we had beef with both those bands
if you'll recall, also like in an interview, definitely just out of nowhere said they, or Mike, the singer, the other singer, said he didn't like Deadly Snakes or Danko Jones' music. Or he didn't even like them. He just was like, I don't really believe them.
What it was?
It was basically that. And these guys are like, what? We've known him for like a while.
I've known him since Goat Dance.
Yeah. Why is he saying this? And it was like,
I believed in Goat Dance too. Damn it.
You know, it did come down, I think, to Mike being like having that wrestling mentality, you know?
Yeah,
and I know you had that period where you were starting all kinds of beefs with, of course, Billy Talent, who are on your side.
They started the beef.
What, by just waltzing?
Theoretically, they started
the show.
No, it was all, that was a miscommunication. There was that beef, I definitely will take a lot of blame on a lot of beefs where I just randomly talk shit, but it's also like, it's not attention getting so much as it is like,
venting.
Let's see how, well, it's like when you're a little kid, like when I look at, you know, you're probably, you know, anyone with a little kid is probably the same way. When you see a little kid grab a microphone the first time, they want to see how loud it goes, right?
They want to put their dick on the microphone.
Yeah, well, like, and the first time you're like in a band and someone actually pays attention to you, you're like, let's see how loud it goes. So you talk the way you would talk to your friends.
I said horrible things.
Yeah, well, you talk the way you talk to your friends.
I felt it's true. And it's like comedy was kind of is the same way when you started doing that. And probably even when you were starting to do more things outside of fucked up. And that's when you kind of go, oh, I get it. I can't actually say anything.
Yeah. Like the only, you know, because.
It's true.
I'm not,
it's true.
This is like, first of all, this is representing the first me.
Yeah.
To like 80% of people hearing this all the time. What I mean? Like most of the time, it's like your first introduction to people until you get like super famous.
Well, that's what they want you to do as a VJ, obviously, is they want you to not say anything bad. But like, I can't do it. Like, I really don't like 90% of the music out there. So
can I name one of those bands?
If it starts with a K and ends with a Perry, then we might be close to.
That's right.
Oh, I remember Countdown to Oblivion singer Steve Perry.
I say. I sang in that band. Thank you very much, Nick Flanagan. So no beef.
So did Danko.
Did you? Oh, yeah. You sang with them. I was a scab filling in for Chris Callahan when he went to China.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Is that on videotape anywhere?
I don't know. It was at the Button Factory in Waterloo. But practicing for Countdown to Oblivion was the most intense musical experience. Was the most intense musical experience I've ever had in my life.
How so?
Because it's Steve Perry, who is an amazing, pillar of Toronto punk rock for many years. But he sang in this band with Chris Callahan from Curse, and mm-hmm. I'm bringing all the listeners up to speed on the shorthand that we're talking in here. Mm-hmm. And so I went to his apartment to do this rehearsal, and I'm used to playing in hardcore bands, which is like, if I don't know a word, I'll just make a noise that sounds like it should go there. And so he's printed up the lyric sheets, and it is like, it is crazy. It looks like something out of a movie when they're training someone to fight a boss.
I've still never understood hardcore
lyrics. That sounds like
lyrics.
Steve Perry.
Oh. How hardcore lyrics, and emo, whatever. Like, there's a whole world of lyrics that I look at, and I'm like, how are these lyrics? This is a book. Why did you write it? What is this? You couldn't get a publishing deal, so you got to try to get a...
But what did you do when Steve presented you with the lyric sheet? Did you just go, Steve?
Now I would be like, yeah, the fuck I'm doing that. But at this point, I was like, oh, geez, well, I better study. So we proceeded to do, I want to say, 5 hours of just vocal rehearsal over, 2 days, mm-hmm. where we'd sit there and he'd take the sheet away from me. He's like, now try it. Without the sheet, and then they get the sheet back. And it was just like, oh, it was like school.
That totally sounds like just like Steve Perry.
Exactly. It was like, I've never,
getting so stressed out.
It was so stressful. It was so stressful.
And how was the show?
And then they were like, let's just blow some steam and go to Who's Emma and worry about what words we say.
Let's go down to Who's Emma and look through the same 10 records 1,000 times.
What were you asking him?
The show was.
The show was, I played with my back to the audience, and I used a lot of Chris Callahan.
Nobody could hear you. Yeah, sound was garbage.
No one was going to pick up whether I got the chorus of Spray Peck right.
It was in
it's in the Button Factory.
It's in the Button Factory,
so it's just like this cavernous, giant room that's like a fifth full. Yeah. And it sounds echoing all around.
I remember that being a good, the show we played there, I remember
but
really liking
you know,
it. It stands up, but I think that's before shows got crazy for punk shows and hardcore shows in Toronto. I think it was when No Warning came in.
Yeah.
I remember the show, it was like Hatebreed and No Warning opened. No Warning had been around before, and there was moshing and Tinker and Combo and The Swarm. But I remember the show when No Warning played with Hatebreed. And they had all these friends come up from America, and it was the first time people in Toronto had seen that super hard style of dancing.
Right.
I remember their kids push moshing, and then some kid, one of their friends from Boston, I think it was Mullet, punching the kid in the face, and he just exploded like a villain in Zelda. Pop!
I've come to the conclusion that I'm uber self-conscious and also probably have OCD. So these are things that limit your musical spectrum. You know what I mean? Never think of it that way. If you pick up one, people hate bands. Really, that's something funny here. I do think that this is totally the screw face capital. Even show to show, no matter you're fucking fucked up, Danko Jones, you're going to look in the audience in the front row and there'll be one guy looking like his fucking... girl, he accidentally walked in and walked to the front and then realized he didn't want to be
Danko and I have gotten to the point now where your friends don't come anymore, so you don't have to worry about anyone that being bummed out. It's
but
just
I'm not
all
even
strangers
talking about people I'm just talking about looking in someone's
face. I know what you're saying.
I'm actually talking about that thing yesterday. I did this show at Bambi's at this tiny venue in the basement, and we started playing, there's no lights. There's no indication the show has started. Except the American Apparel model DJing stops the music, and then I start making this distorted noise into a microphone. And
second time you've mentioned her.
Yeah.
Well, you're really into this.
He is.
I just thought it would be a good story to a good, people, the good people of the Danko Jones podcast listenership now have more to.
There should be a spinoff picture podcast about Nick's sexual conquests. Lack of sexual, lack of conquest.
I've never had an orgasm.
You just hold it off. You're like,
that's the trick.
I heard Woody Harrelson didn't too. No, I know what you're saying though. There's that thing where, you look out, and no matter what, no matter how good the show is, you see the kid leaving.
Oh, yeah, I was talking about Wrong Hole. Like, yeah, there was a guy performing, or when I'm performing, we're getting started, and for, like, the first 2 minutes, this guy's in the front is just facing away from me. And I'm just like, and I just
the whole audience, the whole audience disappears, and you're only playing for that person.
And I just spin him around. I'm just like, I don't have time for this. I can't emotionally do anything other than just either fight you or do something aggressive to you. And, you know, because it was just like, it's just too insulting. You know,
well, it's true. Also, at that point, it's a huge world. There's plenty of places for you to stand backwards.
But, yeah. But, you know, the truth is, he was probably like, he could have been on his way to the bar. You know? Yeah,
but that's one thing I took from you and that time is that, like, the audience is there to be fucked with, and not in, like, a mean, malicious way, but, like, in a, both of you guys do it, like, where you play with the audience, and if, like, if you let for a second the fear show, like, if you had stood there and, like, stared at this guy with his back to the audience and not turned him around, that would have ruined the show for everyone.
Unless you made a big thing of doing that.
Yeah. You know, unless you made that, like, into part, like, of the thing.
It's, but
that's, which is what I do, just because it's just...
It's easier.
You just let it go and you make a bit out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And now getting older, it's like, I just don't... I don't want to be this guy careening around the fucking room from, like, the back to the front. You know what I mean?
Not,
like,
all of us can do it, Nick.
No, you've got it. You've slimmed down.
Not all of us can do it.
You're better. So by this guy, you mean Damien? Yeah. Is that what you mean?
I don't want to be this guy pointing right at me. You can't see it on the radio.
No, but I mean, I kind of think, like, you have your thing is more like, you're initially rooted in place, just because, especially, it's almost like, because you're not as big as you used to be, but you were, like, a big presence. That that was what was always.
But that all came from, the reason I started doing that is because we started playing shows when we started getting, like, all this big kind of indie buzz, where we booked into venues that were considerably too big for us. And that, you know, happens to every band. And so I would be playing, and there would be people be, like, spread way the fuck out.
Oh, yeah, you have to do that. You have to.
I'm not going to, like, stand there and just, like...
Yeah. No, I mean, I still do that all the time. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't want to do it.
No, I know what you're saying.
it's work.
It's like, honestly,
it's also, like, it changes what you're doing. You're no longer playing a show. You're now part of the antics, right?
It can get so...
Because you can't focus on what you're doing at that point.
Exactly. I used to do that the first few shows that we played, and exactly what you said, Nick. It's too much work to get down and get back up
and the sound hit mix, your mark. And, like, just matching with the sound mix and stuff, like, with, like, hearing the guitars and, like, make sure everything... If you're, like, off stage and they're playing with the monitors, like, it can be... You don't know what the hell's going on.
Oh, no. But that's part of the fun.
Yeah, it is really fun. No.
But I know what you're saying. Like, I think it is. There are days where I, like, walk out on stage and, like, we'll be opening for someone. I'll be looking down on this huge stage, like, how the fuck am I going to get down from here today?
I still play places that half the time don't have stages.
And
so it's like,
you're obligated to do that.
I have to, like, climb some fucking object and, like, wave at the people, because you got to get the people in the back, and that's the only real way to get them to know that you're there and that you know about them, you know, or not the only way, but it's a way. And
Matt from the Bronx, he does that.
He does a great
lot.
Job.
And Michael Monroe from Hanoi Rocks.
Yeah.
I've seen him do it with a broken leg.
Apparently, that's cool.
Matt from the Bronx is, like, he's unbelievable as a front person.
I think he's amazing. I mean, Michael Monroe is a especially now at his age, he's such an inspiration. I mean, he's doing what people half his age can't even do.
Like Iggy.
He's like an Iggy.
There's genetic freaks out there.
And he looks great, too. I mean, he looks great, and he's straight edge.
Do you guys think, do you think you're a genetic freak? Do you think do you see yourself being able to sort of do this?
No, I feel my knees going.
It's crazy what happens to people's bodies. Yeah. I mean, I have friends who are, like, in their mid-40s, you know, and they look great or whatever, and then they're just like, oh, yeah, my back.
I think
my back is, like, I can't do anything, you know?
Yeah. Like my back's still fine, which I was worried about, because I was like, you know, not that I'm, like, was doing anything really insane, but, like, you know, just doing a cartwheel, just, like, landing on a flat back, which one of my...
You do cartwheels?
Yeah, I can do a cartwheel. Oh, my God. It's, like, one of those, like, I saw when I was a kid, John Belushi, and I'm like, I'm going to do that one day. And then I just, like, did so many bad ones, eventually I can do kind of a cartwheel turnover now.
Awesome.
But I would do that and just land on my back, and this is back when I was, like, 340, and or just, like, jump off the stage and land on my knees or something, like, stupid. And it's like...
You look so great now, too.
Oh, thanks.
Well, yeah, you do.
This is not on purpose. Definitely. I did not try and lose weight. Like, I think...
But you just cut things out
without... I didn't even. I started smoking pot and got off my anti-anxiety pills and just found I didn't need to supersize the combo or get the double burger.
I mean, I did kind of... All it is portion control. Drinking was really... it seemed like it was, like, intentionally out of control.
You mean soda.
Soda, yeah.
No alcohol still.
No, I literally mean drink soda. Oh, yeah. I think that's damaging, you know, in a way.
I was up to 3 liters sometimes. A day.
Yeah, like if you're drinking that much of like liquid sugar, right? Then it's like you're it's not gonna be good.
No, and but, and so like I really think I definitely am not. I'm happy that I found a way to kind of do this without changing too much of my lifestyle. Like I was really worried that the only way you'd lose weight, you know, where I'd lose weight would be changing myself, and I didn't want to ever change myself. Mm-hmm. And I found once I was off the anti-anxiety.
Why is that?
Because I think so much as a fat kid. So much of your identity is tied to your weight, you know, like you're the fat kid.
In like even a positive sense.
I wouldn't say necessarily a positive sense, but eventually the negatives become just part of the psychosis.
Who you are.
Yeah, like it just becomes like part of who you are. And so I was Damien, you know, and like fat Damien. And I'm still like big, like I'm never going to be svelte, you know, and like muscular or anything like that, but
you're never gonna be svelte or muscular,
you know,
but, because of the lack of effort that you want.
But yeah, exactly. But even more than that, like I just don't have an interest in that. Like I don't like sports, like which is the hardest part about being a parent now. Is I got a kid that loves sports, so I have to watch sports. Ugh. But I've like lost like all this weight from just, you know, luckily just. Smoking weed, like I don't think it's going to work that way for everyone. So
I have like horrible body image right now.
I think everyone does,
and I feel like I look like garbage, I live like garbage. You guys gotta help.
I'm just nodding my head.
You know what you need to do? Start smoking.
Go
weed.
Go on.
I like pot; it's great, but I don't think it's right for me.
No, that's the thing; it's not right for.
I think that if I were smoking pot, well, I don't know. Actually, vaporizers really changed everything a little bit because you kind of don't have that thing where you're
smoking.
You're smoking, so what smoking does is it actually makes you a little tired in a way. Like it's kind of like drinking a pop in a way. Like any kind of like smoke inhalation is like. You do it and it feels, it's like initially stimulating, but then you're kind of like,
well, the thing like not to make this all a weed podcast, Joe Rogan over here, but I just want, that's probably because you're smoking something that's an indica dominant and that's like more of like a downer. But if you smoked a sativa dominant with more THC and less CBD, those are the two different types of trichomes. I think there's three different types or something, but those are the two main ones. You'll probably not be as tired.
There's so much stuff that if I could take back between the ages of like 16 and 21, let's say, not even getting into what I was saying when I was doing comedy when I first started, but that I would
love. I like the comedy you were doing when you first started.
Someone said the other day.
It was so dark.
Very dark.
Yeah, but you know, without justification, because I'm like... A 21-year-old in Toronto.
That's what was so funny about it.
I've become the
most privileged person saying the most offensive things.
Yeah, but that's what was funny about it.
You know what you should do? Because you're wearing a... Nick's wearing a Best Show Ever shirt with all the names. Like, it's like that style of t-shirt, like the Ramones one. There's like a Public Enemy.
Paul, Ringo, John.
Yeah, the Beatles one. But his is all the people involved with the amazing radio show, The Best Show. I think you and me, Nick, should write our names in pen on the bottom. And Nick and Damien.
You know, I would have liked to do that, but then I saw it. First of all, we didn't make the thank yous. And
we made the Twitter thanks the next day.
We did.
Yeah, there was Twitter thanks the next day.
They sent us both of our names.
Yeah. Oh, if you go through, he did like a big thing. Like, I can't believe I'm sorry I forgot these people. And it was like
John Worster did that.
No,
Tom Sharp.
Tom did. Yeah. But the people like on the I was in good company. And like I'm like, hey. If you forgot about me with like
I wasn't mad, yeah.
Some jobbers, like I'd be like, oh.
It wasn't even about being mad. It was
like
about
if you had said
like,
Nick Flanagan and not Damon Abraham, I would have been pissed.
We're always.
Well, Tom Sharpling, what did he do? He
bigged up the show.
He did 18 Wheeler Zine in the 90s.
No, I mean about this podcast.
Yeah, he picked up the podcast.
Oh yeah, he sanctioned it.
He sanctioned it.
I don't remember if he actually sanctioned it.
He did.
That's nice of him to do.
When you were on the show with Dave Hill, he sanctioned the podcast.
Both times that he was nice enough to say like, "Come into the studio." It was both with these like other guests who were like so cool. I don't think I'd met. No, I'd met. I knew Ted Leo because I'd met him
in Toronto, Rowan?
No, in Los Angeles, I think. I met him in Los Angeles, but
he always seemed like the most accessible person involved in that show to me because he was a hardcore kid.
Yeah, I mean Ted Leo is like a really good example of somebody who's like just like a pretty great guy or whatever, and
played in Citizen's Arrest. Dude.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, Ted Leo's in the original lineup.
I met him once. He was a nice guy.
Really nice guy.
When he was on, what's that? Mint.
Yeah. No, he was on Lookout.
Oh, because they were...
But maybe Mint was distributing in Canada.
Yeah, there was like a brother-sister, Mint and Lookout were together.
And then even...
Whoever thought Mint would be the one that survived that sibling relationship.
Isn't there a book on Mint Records?
Yeah, 20 years of Mint. 20 years of Mint. Or something like that. I've read it. It's cool. Like that store, that label's like a really cool. They put
Satan.
A
they suck.
They passed on us.
You're the best.
They passed on you guys.
Yeah.
Holy fuck them. Yeah, and I remember when Cub were like. Remember when Cub came out and people were like, "This is the great power pop hope of Canada." And I loved them. I loved them.
I go back. No, like I listen actually, to Cub again. It's different.
I was writing letters to them too.
I hated them when they were around. Like, because I'm like, this does not. I don't like this.
I loved that shit for some reason because I was like an indie rock kid with like K Records and Kill Rockstars more. So I was pretty open to like Boy Racer and like Heavenly and all that stuff that was more like super syrupy or whatever.
Like that's why, because you were like an indie rock nerd and I was a hardcore warrior. So that's why I didn't like it.
Yeah, and look at which one of us. Is
smoking weed now.
Smoking weed now. I was like sold on Rancid for like about just about the Salvation video when I was a kid, and I was like these guys are cool, and then I kind of was all right with it, but then they got so popular.
I said, fuck them.
The thing is, if you can write, like, catchy songs, well, who cares?
Well, also, like, Rancid got me into, like, so much cool shit. You know,
like Rancid.
Jim Carroll. Jim Carrey got me into Jim. They said The Mask is awesome. But no, Jim Carroll. Like, they had Jim Carroll on Out Come the Wolves. And so my brother and I went as, like, 14-year-old kids to meet Jim Carroll. And we got his autograph and talked to him. And
Wow, that's pretty heavy, man.
It was awesome. And, I was like, Propaganda got me into Noam Chomsky. I probably would have never heard of Noam Chomsky. Well, I would have heard of Noam Chomsky as
by 1999, by the Bush administration. Yeah, but, Noam Chomsky was, like, just everyone was handing you Noam Chomsky and be like, oh, you have to agree with this.
I remember handing in papers to school. And in the footnotes, teachers would be like, Noam Chomsky? Like, he's not... What? Like, but it was just because of Propaganda. I was out there digging in libraries being like, there's got to be systems of power beyond my perception.
My parents had like taped manufacturing. I mean, my family had like Adbusters and stuff.
Yeah.
They were like, when I was like 11 years old and I was like, I loved it. You know, I thought that it was, that was like, and I think Andy Kindler was saying that too. When we interviewed him, he was like, Nick, you're probably the kind of person who was like, 12 years old, like talking about Bob Dylan and stuff.
And you nailed it.
Kind of was, you know, like it was like really early
so
on.
So that's why you peaked too early. And that's why you became so reactionary at 16 to 21.
Yeah.
Because you were like,
but that's it, you know?
Because like, I had my reactionary swing back phase in my mid 20s where I remember doing a zine and there's a list. Oh, there's so much shit in that zine I regret doing.
The fact you even did a zine in your mid 20s is laughable.
Hey,
I did mine when I was 14, bro.
You gotta come by and see my library in my house, which is, I'm gonna say, 75% old zines.
It's just issues of Dishwasher.
I would love. Do you have any old issues of Dishwasher?
I used to have one issue of Dishwasher.
Do you have any old zines?
Awesome. Maybe lying around at my parents' house. But they would be all. The best ones I got were like, I had this one called Great God Pan from San Francisco.
You got the one that came with a 7-inch of all the punk bands?
Mine had like interviews with like Sun City Girls, Icky Boyfriends, and Leather Uppers. It was really great. And then Dishwasher. I love that. I had so many flip sides. So many fucking flip sides.
You're like, Dishwasher.
Dishwasher was great, but all Max Dishwasher Rock and Roll, was a guy writing. You know, Dishwasher, did you ever read it? Dang it.
It's familiar, but
no. It was like a guy chronicling washing dishes in 50 states. That was like his big
thing. I know.
And he got on Letterman eventually, but he didn't get on Letterman. Like, he sent a guy as him to go on Letterman.
Yeah.
It was so crazy. I feel like there was, you know, some Canadian ones like Montgomery, Steamboat Willie, Pumpkin Seed, Slushy. This is definitely not.
So, do you have any cool zines?
No, I had like no, I had no cool zines. I actually probably did have a few. Is Heart Attack, does that count as a zine?
Not a cool one.
Slug and Lettuce?
No, it's cool. It's cool. No, what zine I'm really looking for? My number one zine on my want list. Who's the, what's
there's
the
name? There's a want list?
Slam? I've got want
Slam
list.
Mag, every
I've
issue got, like, of Slam Magazine.
I got three want lists now. Records, zines, and weed strains that I want to try.
Really?
Yeah, and I the mental ones, like I don't physically have them except for the record list. But, right. But the number one zine on my want list is, what's the name of the woman who does that website?
Alien
Pornos. What's the punk porn website? Not Suicide Girls. The other one is big, too.
Kink.com?
No.
It's like a Brazzers?
Punk. No,
Brazzers.
It's like a punk. She's like a punk kid. Like a legit punk rocker.
Brazzers is like actually.
Burning Angel.
Oh yeah, that's of famous. Course. Yes.
The woman who runs that did a zine.
Is she really like
she was a legit hardcore rocker? Kid, yeah. Oh. Like I know a bunch of people that went to like shows with her.
Isn't that Joanna Angel?
I guess. That's really.
Is that her name? Is that her handle? I could be wrong. But.
I don't know.
By the way, one of my favorite Maximum Rock and Roll series of issues were the ones that had big jail interviews with Gigi Allen. Yeah. And also the ones.
Danko Jones?
The Danko Jones one.
Oh, it was like
advertising
for the
guys.
It was like it gave you a buzz. It was like the enemy is for those bands in England at first. Like, it was like shit that there's no way we could live up to, they were saying about us. Mm-hmm. And it was like. And then, like, I knew as I was reading it, like, because I had been the guy that had loved Tear It Up and then hated Tear It Up for no reason, just at some point, just like, fuck Tear It Up, because I'd just seen their name too much, right?
Yeah.
And I go back and listen to the records I didn't like, and I like them now, too. But, but like, you know, so I've been that guy. I've been that kid that just at some point is just like, oh, yeah, I'm sick of hearing about this band. So I knew it was coming, right. You know? But luckily, it came at the exact same time Vice started writing about us.
Yeah.
So it was right. Like, yeah. But I remember reading a review by a friend of mine that I'd stayed with, just trashing us and just being like, holy shit.
I remember when you guys were going to sign to Jade Tree and someone who owned a label said to me, it's over for them. Oh, yeah. Like, he was like, there's no way they're going to lose their base. Like, nobody's going to, like, it's, I, no, I, you know, I have no respect for them. And it's like Jade Tree. It's not even like I think not, you know. It's like a label that went under because it was a small label. Like 2 years later.
Well, I think it's like one of those things where, and I can say this because I'm that guy. But like, I want you around to stay the exact same way you are until I'm sick of you, and then you go away.
Of course.
But do you love the earliest work the most?
A fucked up.
Yeah.
Not the earliest work, not the demos. Earliest work,
but that mid-period, the stuff that was... I feel like there's something really, really, really interesting. I love Chemistry of Common Life a lot, you know?
Yeah, won a Polaris Prize, Nick, so before you talk shit on it, you fucking dick.
No, I have no shit to talk about any of your work.
No, I'm just kidding, I'm joking.
But I could probably find something about some of your work. Didn't you do like 37-minute drone tracks?
We established you were in the Killer Elite. Right, so we can go from there.
All
so
of my bands are terrible.
You take your Camelback 7-inch. No, you're fucking... Tigre Combo's one legitimately... You saw my... Hey, both you guys saw the list I made for Now Magazine of my
thank
favorite
thank you very much.
I've got to remember
and
to...
I really...
I thanked Damien.
Online.
I texted him or something. No, we talked about it on the street.
We ran you on the street.
I talked, and I made fun of you, and then you were like, hey, I just put you in this.
Yeah.
I
was like,
oh,
but, Dick. You fucking dick, Nick.
Like, there was that period of, like... 7
when
inches.
I have beef with Nick, his nickname's not going to be Stanko Jones, but in that vein, Dick Nick.
Dick Nick. Dick Flanagan.
Dick Flanagan.
Yeah.
Dick Flanagan. Dick.
And the funny thing is, one of the biggest knocks on that, and even Brutal Nights, even though really it only sounded like that for like the first two records, was people would be like, oh, it sounds like, you know, like two old guys in Buffalo and like Cleveland would or Milwaukee or somewhere would write online, oh, these guys sound like, it's like rock, R-A-W-K, it's like 90s, you know, junk records, you know, Electric Frankenstein, like, stuff, and it's just like, okay,
what's wrong with that?
Yeah, that's the thing.
But in a way, it's like, don't pretend that that's not part of this whole stupid thing, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, I'm sorry that, you know, we're not clock cleaner.
But that was like there's just times and periods where people like want a certain thing, right? You can look at the prevailing taste of the bands that are popular and you can tell what people are into at that time, and it's like you can chase that, and there are bands that chase that. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, oh, this is what we got to do now, and it's like that will look so lame in the end.
Everyone gets bummed out, like, oh, so just I like, want to name so many names.
You just do what you do. And then if people like it, they mm-hmm. like it. And if they don't, you can't force them.
You would have.
I think that's the thing with us. Like, we just. I don't think at any point we're like, okay, we've got to write songs that indie and hipsters like, so we can get free clothes and do this. Like, we just wrote these songs, and like whatever happened. And like,
yeah,
I could walk you through every decision we ever made, and I assure you, it was never. Like, there were definitely calculated decisions on Mike's part and calculated things that he did.
It's a good thing.
But I think it was, like, never the stuff that looked as well thought out. Like, you know, what label to sign to. We signed to J-Tree because one of the J-Tree dudes, I'm trying to remember which one, approached me when we opened for Hardskin in Philly. And I was like, who's putting out your LP? We're like, we don't know. And he's like, we'd do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And then I got a Turning Point on Gold out of the deal. My most wanted record on my wallet back then. Yeah!
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, even saying, so a guy comes up to you at a show, it's like, oh, I'll put everything. And even that is somehow selling out, you know, like, I'm not saying it is, but it's viewed as that way.
I think it's also changed a lot now from then.
Like, everyone's a sellout now. Yeah. There's no fucking rules. Like, everyone, I don't know why that is, you know?
Because I think these companies got really smart and really savvy. And they're like, you know, like years ago, it would be Pepsi would put millions into Michael Jackson and then millions into Madonna. And then mm-hmm. both those personalities did controversial things and fucked up and blah, blah, blah. So, and the brands were so tied to them that I think these companies now realize that the smarter way to do it is just
disperse it.
You know, like give a bunch
have
of
a festival.
Stuff, put on a festival, put on a couple records. And like you look at the companies that are doing
involve skateboarders.
I really think it's like test markets right now. Like if you look at Scion is a division of Toyota, which mm-hmm. is the big company.
Yeah.
Green Label Sound, Mountain Dew is a division of Pepsi, which is the big company. So you almost look like these are like their feelers trying to figure out the infrastructures they'll need and things like that. And then when these big companies sign artists, mm-hmm. it's going to be a huge artist. And they'll figure out how to do it. And it just makes so much more. My dad used to work for Pepsi, and he was telling me that one time in a meeting, they'd be like, you know, it's a shame that we don't actually ever own the artist. We're always going through a record label. But now they do. Now you can own the artist.
But that's what I've been so obsessed with lately is the idea of ownership of your stuff and like how much it's worth. And just like, because in punk, I think like some level of it, there's just no contracts and stuff. And and then in the end, you wind up kind of in a weird place if there's even any amount of airplay, any amount of usage of your songs, you know, and it's like, why not just now put everything out yourself?
Yeah.
You know, unless you're at Scion, a certain level.
For example, Scion. You mentioned Scion.
Scion of the times.
They put out a COC EP and a Yob live album mm-hmm. that I know of.
Yep.
How are they ever going to use that the way they were able to hire Michael Jackson?
Because but COC has like an audience.
No, but I don't think what you're doing, you're not going for a COC fan now. You're going for that guy years from now. But you're also trying to just make your brand look cool and be like, this brand isn't like those brands.
I'll buy a Scion. I can actually get in free to Gilman Street if I buy this Scion.
They've got this weird partnership. I think Gilman will be the last place that sells out that way.
Yeah, I mean, but that's it. Is, you know, because I also think that there was kind
of... But I'm not, and also, like, I'm not faulting... See, the people, like, obviously there's some motives in there, but, like, I'm not faulting these people at these companies that do these jobs. Like, my job is to find a band to give free stuff.
Well, at the end of the day, there's like a guy at Scion who loves Yob.
Yeah, that really is what it comes down to. And you know, you kind of see it. One of the most interesting things to see in the last 10 years in American punk, you could call it stuff, but it's a little bigger than that, is all these people that you first meet. Who you're like, oh, that's the cool tour manager for this like super punk band. This is like the cool punk booker. They all get fucking real jobs that are huge. You know what I mean? Like over 10 years, people get more and more professional and you're like, oh. And I was reading some article about like, I hope 2014 is the year the word hipster dies, which that would be great, I guess. But
it'll just revert back to scenester.
It defined it very interestingly, which was... we live in an era of like curated consumption where it's like, you know, like it's like white people FUBU.
Sorry, what? sorry, what? What?
No, not that. But it's just like.
Then we have to beat the entire intellectual conversation we've had.
No, but we live in this era of like, curated consumption where it's still very much capitalism. It's still very much like, getting it, like you know, consuming things and constantly needing to feed, but it's this stuff that everyone grew up with. Yeah, and it's got more accessible than ever. You know, and it's like, I think 90s culture is because of those are the people who are older now and thus probably have more money and are more stable. It's got a stranglehold, you know what I mean? Everyone can access that and see it most easily, and it's a huge influence now. And you know, it's the old guy. Don't trust anyone over 30. Still,
well, I think
that's what I'm saying, kids. Is anyone under 30 listening to this?
Like, it's gone from that being 1% or a point of a percentage of the population that was aware of kind of like hate zines and punk rock and cool hip hop and all this kind of like black metal and all this kind of stuff that's part of this giant cultural cool stew that's now just spilling out into the mainstream.
But you know what? I mean, isn't that what everybody wanted?
That's really what it comes
the
down
end
to.
Result is, right, anyways. But I think what people and now that it's wanted, happening,
well, that's the thing, is like
people are kind of resenting.
People want a handcrafted thing. You know, like that was the thing about zines, right? Is like, it's so, it's not so different from the internet, but there is something about the internet and the fact that like it's a bunch of numbers and programming that you're looking at rather than some pages that someone either wrote on and photocopied or like typed on and photocopied and then folded and, you know, like stapled. Like, I think that aspect of it,
the hands-on approach,
that and the people who, I mean, zines are still around.
I think when we did that best show panel, Nick and the last best show. I don't think we ever talked about how we our speaking engagement.
Yeah, we did but a speaking engagement.
When we did that,
our second that we've done together.
But when we did that panel, like, here's a group of people in Toronto that have been brought together by a community radio show. Like, I think we have like that have come together in a movie theater on like a freezing terrible night, and just to talk about this radio show, this like. And it's
so crazy. It was so weird.
You have millions of these little pockets now. Like, there's just so. Yeah. I find it really exciting that there's so many little scenes, and it's like there's a lot of hegemony in the upper echelon.
Sure.
But now if you're like, I like sludge with black metal parts, and then maybe someone singing operatic
parts. Right.
There's probably a little scene of
there's
bands
a little
doing
group
that.
Of people. I mean, it makes it less lonely.
I know, way less lonely. I guess when I'm talking about the uniformity, though, it's like it somehow involves the fact that everything is so stratified and categorized. Yeah. I can't really explain how that.
I understand.
Sort of, you know, like it's like the fact that it's all within.
But I like it like that because
human nature is just you want to break down things into manageable bits of information. Like, we organize our books, our records, we alphabetize things.
That's how I do it.
What stresses me out about having music on iPods, having music on my computer and stuff is like, I just want it to sound good. You know?
I don't even care if it sounds good.
No, I want it to sound good because
you talking about, what was that band you were saying? You loved it when it was like the raw.
Fucked up?
No, it wasn't fucked up. It was another band. Anyways.
We got a new album coming out, too.
What's it called?
It's going to be called Nick's Crisis. Actually, it's going to be called Music 50-Foot Radius. Fuck you, Nick. Stole your title.
Hey, Music 50. Is that what we were going
to call it? You were going to call the Teen Cred Cowboy album?
Music 50-Foot Radius.
Music 50-Foot Radius. Or you were going to call Judgment Night 2 soundtrack.
Well, we did call
it. That's what we called it. I remember your take between the two.
Music 50-Foot Radius. No way am I selling.
Do you remember when you and me were going to start
Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons campaign.
I would love to do that.
Vapor Social says we can do it there.
I got to do it over Skype.
Is there a DM? Do you guys have a DM?
We don't have a DM yet.
That's what every campaign is looking for.
We don't have a DM. We do. The woman that works there who owns it, Camille, is a DM. And DM'd for
years.
Dude,
I'm in.
Have you seen that Twitter? I would do it. Honestly, I would have to Skype with you guys on it because I'd be probably away.
Now, I haven't played D&D since TSR.
How cool would it be to be playing it's still TSR, but it's Wizards of the Coast. And
We would play TSR second edition.
It's the only one I know.
Yeah, because I still have my player's manual.
Cool. I got all that shit down there.
I got all that shit.
Oh, look at that.
It's over there.
You have first edition, right?
I have second edition. Yeah.
Second was the best.
I went to Harborfront Dungeons and Dragons camp
for
like
two years in a row.
I went like two or three years.
Let's fucking do this.
Let's do this.
Is this how we're going to end the podcast?
We could. Yeah, okay. You, me, Dave.
Dave would probably do it.
I think Dave would do it.
Yeah.
I'm so fucking down for this.
But I'll be on Skype.